Now shall we read again, please, from 2 Corinthians. This time we're reading the whole of chapter 9. So our brother said this is the last of the readings, and we go now through to the end of chapter 9. And in so doing, to the end of this section that we've been speaking of in the epistle. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 1. For as touching the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you, for I know the forwardness of your mind, for which I boast of you to them of Macedonia, that Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal hath provoked very many. Yet have I sent the brethren, lest our boasting of you should be in vain in this behalf, that as I said, ye may be ready. Lest haply, if they of Macedonia come with me and find you unprepared, we, that we say not ye, should be ashamed in this same confident boasting. Therefore I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren, that they would go before unto you and make up beforehand your bounty, whereof ye had notice before, that the same might be ready as a matter of bounty, and not as of covetousness. But this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly, or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that ye always, having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. As it is written, he hath dispersed abroad, he hath given to the poor, his righteousness remaineth forever. Now he that ministereth seed to the sower, both minister bread for your food, and multiply your seed sown, and increase the fruits of your righteousness, being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causeth through us thanksgiving to God. For the administration of this service not only supplieth the want of the saints, but is abundant also by many thanksgivings unto God. Whilst by the experiment of this ministration, they glorify God for your professed subjection unto the gospel of Christ, and for your liberal distribution unto them and unto all men, and by their prayer for you, which long after you, for the exceeding grace of God in you. Thanks be unto God for his unspeakable gift. And we know that God will bless the reading of his word. Now, at the sake of being laborious, let me just remind you that this is the second of those large sections, of those major sections in the epistle. But as we've said, we conclude it today by reading through and discussing chapter 9. It is the section that we put up the label over it, fruitfulness, and it has within it the subject of giving. But our brother David West made a valuable comment to me anyway yesterday in reminding us that these three sections have a common thread that run through them. For, you remember that he said, the common thread is all to do with the visits that were taking place to Corinth. And so that you can see that running through if you think about it carefully. You'll notice how that in the beginning of the epistle, he alludes in chapter 1 to his visits to Corinth. And some of those Corinthians almost were saying about him that he was almost a little frightened to come to Corinth because they were too big for him. But the apostle shows that his movements personally were under the control and guidance of the Spirit of God. May ours also be like the apostles were. But what we do want to do anyway today is to look and to notice that we saw yesterday, or was it the day before, that chapter 8 is really bringing to us giving on the ground of grace. And when we turn to chapter 9, we have some elements of the ground of righteousness introduced as well. But what I do want us to notice in particular now, as we turn to it, is the three sections within it. I don't intend to give a long introduction this morning. I think we've well introduced this epistle in various ways and its sections. So all I want to do simply now is to divide the chapter and ask you to see that we could look at it like this. Indeed, this is how we are going to look at it for the purpose of the reading. So we're going to look at it from verses 1 to 4, first of all, and over that I've simply written the boast of the apostle. Now, we've been considering this already, of course, the boast of the apostle. And there you'll see, in verse number 2, he speaks again of, "For which I boast of you to them of Macedonia." And then you'll see in verse 4, he speaks of this same confident boasting, the boast of the apostle. And then we'll turn to verses 5 to 11, and we'll think about the bounty of the saints. The bounty of the saints. And you'll notice in verse 5, he speaks about this your bounty. And then again in verse 6, he speaks about sowing bountifully. And you'll see, as you go down the passage, that there are various references like that, verse 11, bountifulness. So we have the bounty of the saints. And then finally, in verses 12 to 15, we'll think about the blessing which results. Now, I do understand, before you tell me, that the word bounty really means blessing. But what I have in mind in the closing section is the general blessing that will that results from this whole act, this whole exercise, is summed up, in a sense, in verses 12 to 15. And you'll notice that Paul says in verse 12, "For the administration of this service, it not only supplies the wants of the saints." Now, that's one of its major reasons, of course. But it not only supplies the need of the saints, but he said, or the wants of the saints, but it's abundant also by many thanksgivings unto God. And he says, "Whilst by the experiment of this ministration they glorify God, because it shows your professed subjection to the gospel of Christ, and it speaks of your liberal distribution, and there are blessings which result from the matter of giving." So that's the sort of broad sections. Now just let's say very little about each, and then we sit down. When we turn to the first section, notice that the apostle is really speaking about the fact in verse 1, "It is a superfluous for me to write to you as touching the ministering to the saints." In other words, I assume that the apostle is saying is, A, because the men who are coming are competent men, and secondly, the Corinthians don't really need to be told now because he's seen the evidences in them of their response to the ministry. But what I do want you to notice, brethren and sisters, although Paul says it's superfluous, he still writes. You know, if you look at the Thessalonian epistles, he writes about their love. And he says, "You abound." But he says, "I'm writing that you may abound more and more." Paul always wanted the highest ground for God's people. He was satisfied in many senses, but he still wanted to lift them higher. And so we see that although he says it's superfluous, and he's thankful to God that they've responded, he still wants to see them really fulfill this ministry. So there is a ministry in these verses that will still encourage the people of God. Let's never forget, and let's never be complacent with the progress of God's people. You know, we sometimes say, "You don't need to minister that there, because they're doing it already." But you know, brethren and sisters, we always need to strengthen the things that remain, and to see that there'll be a development of those good qualities that are already seen. So that sort of idea runs in these early verses, from 1 to 4, when the apostle speaks of his boast. Now you'll notice, just look with me for a moment at verse 2, "For I know," says Paul, "the forwardness or the readiness of your mind, and this is the thing I've been boasting of you to them of Macedonia and Achaia." Perhaps we should say, for those who have not consulted the map of that particular period, when you look, you see the two names in the verse, Macedonia and Achaia. Now, Macedonia was northern Greece, and Achaia was southern Greece. We just speak of the land of Greece today, but that's how it was divided. And, of course, the Macedonian believers, we've thought a little about them, Macedonia was the area where you found Philippi and Thessalonica and Berea, those places. But Corinth was in Achaia. Now, if you see, he's writing to Corinth. Now, if you get that, it'll help us to see what the apostle is saying. Let's read it with that in mind now. For I know the readiness of your mind, for which I boast to them of Macedonia. I've been telling those in northern Greece about you and your exercise, and I did it a long time ago. We learned that yesterday in our reading, but we're going to learn it again in this reading today. And notice he says, that I told them that Achaia was ready a year ago. In other words, I told them that you, in Corinth, and your surrounding areas of Achaia, were ready a year ago. And your zeal, you see what he's saying? Your zeal hath provoked very many. Now that helps to support what our brother Mr. West pointed out in the Bible reading yesterday, that the first ones really to be exercised about this matter were in Corinth. Do you see? And that in fact that had been a provocation of a good sort, because we can provoke to love and to good works. We learn that in the Hebrew letter. And that had been used in the hand of God to provoke the Macedonians. But he's using this now as a return encouragement, as a rebound encouragement to the saints now. They've been provoked and they've done it. Now don't you fail in the exercise. You see, it's all that idea of the ministry. Yet, says Paul in verse 3, have I sent the brethren, lest our boasting should be put to shame, should be in vain, that as I said, you may be prepared, ready or prepared. Lest haply, if, now look at verse 4, lest haply, if they of Macedonia come with me. That seems to suggest, we'll hear what our brethren have to say in the reading, but it seems to suggest that the two brethren who were going to accompany Titus were not from Macedonia. He says, if they of Macedonia come. So it looks as though that there were not those from Macedonia already, but if they come with me and find you unprepared, we, that we say not ye, we look at these statements in the reading, should be ashamed in this same confident boasting. So verses 1 to 4, the boast of the apostle. Verses 5 to 11, the bounty of the saints. Now notice in verses 6 and 7, and I'll have to hurry or I'll be as long as I've been in the introductions and they're meant to be shorter. Look at verses 6 to 7. The apostle is really saying in a way in those verses, giving is not a loss but a sowing. Can you see that? Giving is not a loss. When you give, yes, you may have less money in your pocket, but you're sowing. You see what Paul is actually saying? So he says in verse, he which, and then he talks about the way to sow. That's another thing to notice. If you sow sparingly, you'll reap sparingly. So you put a handful of seed in, you'll only get what comes from a handful of seed. And then if you put two handfuls, well, you'll get more. You see the point? So he's really showing to us that the harvest it must have a relationship to what you sow. And that's a very important principle, and we want to look at it together, no doubt, when we come to it. He which soweth bountifully in the spirit of blessing. Do you remember we said bounty means blessing? So he that soweth in the spirit of blessing, and I take it in his heart, the prospect of blessing. But after all, a man doesn't go out and work hard in his field and think, I'll just put that in, I'm not worried about it, and I'm not really interested in what comes out. Of course he puts it in with a view to the harvest. So that he's saying, if you sow with the spirit of blessing, then you'll reap the blessing. That's what he's essentially saying in verse 6. Verse 7, the purpose is in his heart, not grudgingly, not of necessity. So you see, he mustn't sow sparingly, verse 6. He mustn't sow reluctantly, verse 7. He mustn't sow just because he needs to, it's of necessity. This is gratuitous. This is voluntary. This is in the spirit of giving. These are very important principles, no doubt, we want to discuss. But I mustn't do what I used to sometimes think brethren did when I was young, and take all the meaty bits out before anybody has a chance to say them. So let's move on. And we'll come to the third section. Well, I should have said verses 8 to 11. We learn that God can and will bestow not only the right spirit, but the means of exercising it. Notice that. And then when we come to 12 to 15, the blessing which results. Do you notice in verse 12 he speaks about abundance? It is abundant. He speaks in verse 13 about glorifying to God. He speaks about a liberal distribution in verse 13. He speaks about the exceeding grace of God in verse 14. And he speaks about the unspeakable gift in verse 15. The blessings which result. Now let's start the Bible reading and go through this in our sections. Now let us notice then, first of all, as we come into that first section, this matter of the boast of the apostle is still being spoken of, but you'll notice that he does talk about the ministration. As touching the ministration to, or which is in the saints, or which is for the saints, it is superfluous for me to write unto you, for I know the readiness of your mind. Let's hear what he says.
In addition, Jim, to what you've already said in relation to verse 1, I wondered, they also had the additional information that was given to them at the end of the first epistle.
And that would also help it to render it being superfluous now to write. Yes, that's helpful. You see what our brother's saying? That they've got those details that Paul gave in the first epistle. So it's superfluous to write those things again. I see your point, yes.
In these opening verses, could I suggest you get, first of all, what he credits them with, the readiness. And secondly, you have what he cautions them of, the danger of having to blush. And you have, thirdly, what he counsels them to in these opening verses.
Good. That's very good. Yes. Do you want to say a bit more about it?
You said that there was the idea of the boast of the apostle, and there was the idea of the bounty of the saints. But between these, you have the blush of the apostle.
Very good. You were always good on alliteration, weren't
you? He would be absolutely ashamed,
yes,
if he arrived and what he said wasn't right.
That's very good. And you see what our brother is pointing out? That he's actually saying in verse 4, verse 4 is what you have in mind, he's saying, lest happily, if they come with me and find you unprepared, that we should be ashamed in this same, we should be put to shame in the confidence that we have. That's the blush, you see, that our brother is emphasizing. Thank you. Now what about verse 2? For I know the readiness of your mind, for which I boast of you to them of Macedonia. Are we all happy what we've said about the geographical regions and so on? We've covered some of this already, of course.
Frank, do you want to say something? No, no, no. But to say in conjunction with your opening remarks was that no man liveth to himself, that here was an example and a provoked exercise of the others. And when you were speaking, my mind went to Philippians 1, verse 14. Many walked full through my bonds. The fact that Paul was a man of conviction and was prepared to go to prison. Others say, if a man can go to prison, I'll speak for Christ, that many walked full. The same principle. That none of us live to ourselves.
Now that's a very important principle. You've all heard that, brother. No man liveth unto himself. The things that we do wrong can be an influence on others. And the things that we do for the glory of God. Now I'm quite sure in my mind that the Macedonians were not giving because they had the Corinthians in mind. They were giving because they had the people in Judea in mind. And their desires were to help the saints. But nevertheless, what they did was a provocation to others. And is used by the apostle to stimulate others. Now, someone else.
The other thing is the truth of the body of the assembly here. Because if one part of the body is operating in a certain way, it affects other parts.
Yes.
That's why the view is provoking others.
It's interesting that Mr. Darby translates it, stimulates the mass of the brethren.
He does, the mass of the brethren. Now what do you take out of that?
Well, I was thinking about the body aspect.
Yes, yes, yes. So it's showing the quite the wide influence. Of the word it was exerted.
Yes.
I just asked you about it was. It's many. And this term...
Very many.
It's very many. And this term many and very many is sometimes used by people to talk about a majority. I wonder if you could have been there. Sorry, Jim.
Just a general comment about this question of giving, that we need to remember that God is not dependent on our generosity. God don't give, God is not going to be impoverished by that.
No.
The point is that God is giving us the opportunity to reap a harvest blessing by being involved in supplying the need of others.
Now what you say is absolutely right. Yet, but it doesn't take away from it by the top. Yet, in the giving, God is glorified. So there's a sense in which we rob God of glory if we don't do it. But you're quite right, God is not in any way impoverished. And he can meet the need, he can raise up the stones and so on. But nevertheless, as you rightly say, he's not impoverished, but he's glorified when we do give.
Yes.
It is suggested that the apostles feared in the interval between their first original exercise and the occasion of him writing that there was a diminishing of their exercise in relation to meeting the need of the saints. That's why he writes here, he credits them by saying it's superfluous, but at the same time, he sees the possibility of that exercise being diminished.
There's always the possibility of failure in the saints, isn't there? We're always subject to discouragement or to failure. So he's really sewing up those sort of things and making sure that he strengthens the exercise.
Brother Raymond and our brother Peter.
Could it be a lack of godly origin part of the Corinthians? I think in verse 3, you may be ready. Verse 4, and find you unprepared. And the word before occurs three times in verse 5. Prior planning, they were falling short in godly order. You think of the first epistle, chapter 14, verse 40. Let things be done decently and in order. They were willing to give, and the things organized properly. That's why Paul involved Titus. So we need here a godly order in the things of God, don't we?
Now that's a very interesting comment I thought the has made, isn't it? That all things be done decently and by arrangement. And part of the instructions that David mentioned a few moments ago in the first epistle really bring out some of the order, and as you rightly say, it's probably part of the order that Paul wanted to see in Corinth. There was doctrinal order, there were practical, there was moral order that the apostle is setting right, the way in which they were dealing with the world and so on, and also this man.
Yes, it's all too easy for things in the assembly to be done in a slipshod manner.
Yes.
And we would never suffer these things in relation to our business and industry.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The book's account of the sermon and the monk, we have this verse 58, and it shall be given unto you, good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, shall men give unto your bosom, for with the same measure that you meet, withal it shall be measured to you.
Very good. Now I think that's very helpful. I think we're going to see that come out, particularly in that next section of the book, when we start to talk about the bounty in its.
Brother
Ferrier.
In this exercise here, surely we see that where the giver as well as those that receive are blessed. Don't we see that brought out in the Joppa experience of Peter? God could have spoken to the person needs.
Yes,
they're right. But Peter had to get a blessing. Peter had to learn a lesson as well.
Absolutely.
And so there were. And both were blessed.
That's right. And I think as the chapter progresses, we're going to see the blessings that result are the multitudinous blessings, really. They're to all. Yes.
Ask a question.
Yes, please.
With regard to verse 4, do you think that this is a hypothetical statement, or was it the intention that certain representatives from the Macedonian churches should actually accompany Paul when he eventually came to collect the bounty?
Yes, I rather think that on the principle that we've already been examining in the previous chapter, that because there would be bounty from the other half of Greece, i.e. Macedonia, that just as there would be representatives from Achaia, whosoever he approved, he had said, you remember in chapter 15, we've got to remember But in the passage our brother West has mentioned already, that he said, whosoever ye shall approve shall go with us. So that they would send representatives, so I assume that there would be representatives from Macedonia as well. So I think but of course he never knows how it's going to finally fall out. So he says, last happily, if they of Macedonia come with me, I do. Are you happy with that?
Yes. Is it not possible that the two unidentified men in the previous chapter were of Macedonia?
But surely, sorry, Jim, sure.
No, that's it. See, you're responding. That's tremendous.
Well, the two men were to go with Titus in advance.
That's right.
There's the possibility of here, they of Macedonia, coming with me, Paul.
That's what I had in mind about the difference in my introduction. Yes. I do want, before we leave there, we seem to be moving out of 2 into 3 and 4, and that's all right, but I just wanted to underline, I think you would agree, Brother David, that what you said yesterday is, I think, that view is strengthened by the end of verse 2.
Yes.
That he's actually saying, Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal hath provoked many. I think that I didn't want to bring it in because I felt we'd wait for the day. But you know, but I think it's another layer we're now seeing that underlines your point. That in fact, Paul is using in this epistle, when you start to read it, you think it all started in Macedonia. But not so, and this is underlining what our brother West said yesterday. In fact, it's the exercise seemed to start in Achaia. Then it got lost. But isn't it interesting that Paul gives them credit even though they have failed and they've slowed down? He still gives them the credit for that original exercise. Now, we've looked at verses. Sorry, go
ahead. I'll just ask a question to you. Look at the verse 3, I sent. As you begin to have confidence in him now as an apostle, or is this just a normal liberty being the father of the children? I sent, and he exhorts them in verse 5, around them and arrive.
I have taken it that when he says I have sent, this is again the epistolary heiress that our brother mentioned. Incidentally, I know it's a difficult phrase, but it's one well worth looking at actually, if you've got the opportunity to do so, because it governs a number of activities in this epistle. You know, it helps you in chapter 2 to see which epistle. There are two epistles referred to in chapter 2, and if you look at the epistolary areas, you find it back. Now, this is what it is. It's speaking in the past tense about something that he's presently doing, because by the time they have the letter, it will be passed as far as the sending is concerned. So notice he says now in verse number 3, yet have I sent the brethren. So he's alluding to those he has sent. He is sending with this letter, I take it. You see, that's the point there. Let's just finish that then. Lest haply away of Macedonia come with me and find you unprepared, now we've looked at that we, first of all, let's take the bracket out, and find you unprepared, we should be ashamed in this same confident boasting. But in the bracket he says that we say not ye. So there's a sense in which there would be effects in both directions, not only on Paul, but upon the Corinthians.
He's identified with them in the exercise.
He's part of it.
So that Titus and those who were with him were really an advanced party to provoke the exercise of the saints in Corinth to fulfill what they had already been ready to do.
That's it. And we see all the principles, which we're not going to go over again this morning. We're leaving this section now, so I just say as we leave it, we see a number of the principles being brought out again and referred to that were very profitably discussed yesterday. The matter of witnesses, the matter of an openness, the matter of spiritual men handling material things, and just reviving them so that we have them, take them away from the Bible readings clearly in our minds. These are important principles, witnesses to how money is handled, and also the matter of spiritual men being involved in carnal things, and I'm using the word as the Bible uses it. Carnal is not always speaking about is not always the moral description of the old nature. It's just in these material things. And it's in material things these men are being involved, although they're spiritual men. And don't forget, when those men would eventually arrive at the place of need, I'm going right on now, when they would eventually arrive at the place of need, that is in Jerusalem, can you see how their ministry would be supported by the practical gifts that they would give? That there would be the evidence of the love of the brethren in those Gentiles. I don't like to talk about Gentile assemblies, really, because by definition an assembly is a negation of Gentile and Jew. But you understand, but the churches of the Gentiles, or the churches on Gentile side. And you can see how it would, in fact, help the ministry more. It's the idea of James, an old brother once again. It's the idea that James brings out in his epistle. Don't say to a man, be clothed and be warmed, and then go away and say, we'll pray for you. You know, give him something to warm. Give him something to help. Sorry.
Because I think the importance of that giving is illustrated by how the company increases. It starts off with Titus. Then, going back to the previous chapter, in 18, we have sent with him the brother. That's the second one we've added.
Yes.
When you come down to verse 22, we have sent with them our brother. There's another addition being made. And now here, in verse 4, the of Macedonia might be coming with them. And I think it indicates the great importance that the apostle gives to this principle of giving.
Yes, that's very good. It's interesting, isn't it, that there seem to be often a band of men moving together in this, even in the spread of the gospel as well. Do you remember Acts chapter 20, is it, around verse 7? There's a number of men there, and they're together with the apostle. It's been quite an experience for these men to share fellowship, to endure the privations, and to preach the gospel. Now we go into the next section. We're going to look now at verses 5 to 11, where we've mentioned that we have the subject of the bounty of the saints. Now look at verse 5 for a moment. Therefore, Paul says, I thought it necessary to exhort. The force of the word beg could be introduced here. Beg the brethren that they would go before unto you and make up beforehand your bounty. This is the blessing that will be communicated to others. It's called a blessing here. And then he says, whereof ye had noticed before, that the same might be ready as a matter of bounty, as a matter of blessing, and not as of covetousness. Now, let me read you one verse. There are other examples. But in the book of Genesis, chapter 33, verse 11, when you remember the matter of Jacob and Esau, and Jacob had a large gift to pacify Esau with. Do you remember that, when he was coming? Now in verse 11 it says, this is what Jacob says, take thee, I pray thee, my blessing that is brought to thee, because God hath dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough. And he urged him, and he took it. Now that was practical goods and cattle that Jacob wanted to give to Esau. It was a blessing. So you can see that sometime, and there are other occasions in the Old Testament where you get these examples of practical goods being called a blessing.
In this section, in these opening verses, again you have first of all the matter of giving, and then you have the measure of giving, and then you have the manner of giving.
So you may not have everybody got some hands.
Could you help us, Jim? I think the verse is more or less self-explanatory. It's just this last expression, not as of covetous.
Yes.
Have you got some hands to give us?
Because I shouldn't be doing all the teaching now.
You move this on, all right.
Well, let's look at it together. Therefore I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren that they would go before, make up beforehand your bounty. Whereof ye had noticed before, that the same might be ready as a matter of bounty, a matter of blessing, and not as of covetousness. Now, covetous means something that is grasped and desired. And I take it what the apostle is saying is that the reason that these men would come was that they would stimulate spiritual exercises so that the giving would be as God gives and not as men give. Men give sometimes at the spirit of covetousness for unveiled reasons. But God stimulates spiritual giving. But have you got more of that for us?
Well, no, I accept that. It's just this word covetousness, which may seem a little strange. I wondered, in fact, coupled with what you say,
whether there was the idea of that the bounty didn't have to be squeezed out. That's what I had in mind, you see,
that's right. And, you know, there is a sense in which if I ask you to give something, I'm almost coveting it from you. Do you see what I mean?
Yes,
I think it's used in that sense.
Yes.
After the first mention, important, isn't it?
It is.
Genesis 14, the battle that came, and the blessing that came out of that. And he blessed him and said, "Blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be the Most High God, which has delivered thine enemies into thine hand." And he gave him tithes of all.
Excellent. So there's an earlier example, the first mention, as Brother Peter has pointed out, of again the use of the word in respect of what we are speaking about today.
And we find it in Genesis 28 with Jacob: "If the Lord bless me, give me food to eat, and bring me a lot to my life, I will give him a tenth of all that he gives me." So a tithe would be a tenth.
Good, excellent.
Brother Jim, material things. When material things are handled properly, they have eternal blessings.
Yes.
I was thinking in the psalm that is quoted actually. It's a wonderful psalm 112, pull it down from the chart.
Yes, yes.
It says, verse 9, "He that hath dispersed, he hath given to the poor, his righteousness endureth forever."
Yes.
Now, in the Lord's temptation, you remember the command that's going to be made bread. Our Lord says, "Man shall not live by bread alone." He shall not live by material things alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. That means material things can only be handled in fellowship with God.
Now that's good. Now that's, so you see, can you see now, just so that we keep orderly, and that's, thank you for that, we'll come back to 9 and we'll examine it again together. I wouldn't like us to leave it, but let's conclude verse 5 first. Paul says, "I thought it necessary to exhort and to beg the brethren." So this was a matter of great importance. And we've been learning, I think, and you'll forgive me for reiterating things, but that's good teaching anyway. You know, to get it into our mind. But Paul is emphasizing here the importance of this aspect of ministry now. We must throw weight on whatever we find in the Bible when we find it, as we said. So he's begged the brethren to go before, to make up this blessing. And we've been looking at the word blessing. Now we're going to see it work out as the verses go on, as our brother Jim has pointed out. I'm only asking us to look at it in order. But, you know, we're going to see that working out. But it is a blessing, that's the point. This is not just a matter of material things. We've got to see that material things are lifted to a high spiritual level amongst the people of God. So look what he says next. "You have the notice before, so that the same matter might be ready." Now you've heard the discussion that David has raised, that the same might be ready as a matter of blessing. So Paul is anxious to put that into the mind, that this is a matter of blessing and not covetousness. But now comes verse 6, "But this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap sparingly." Now this is really from the Proverbs. Let me read to you from the book of Proverbs, because you'll notice it's probably in the margin of your Bible anyway, Proverbs chapter 11. Now if you look at that chapter, verse 18, you'll notice that there the proverb says, "The wicked worketh a deceitful work, but to him that soweth righteousness shall be a sure reward." Now in the same chapter, in verse 24, it says, "There is that scattereth and yet increaseth." Now these are great principles. Brother David mentioned principles yesterday. Look what it says, "And there is that withholdeth more than is meat, but it tendeth to poverty." See the wisdom of the wise man. And then look at listen to verse 25 in Proverbs. "The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him, but blessing shall be upon the head of him that selleth it." Now you can see then this principle that's coming out in verse 6. "He which soweth sparingly shall reap sparingly. he which soweth bountifully in the spirit of blessing, I take it, the word bountifully, I think Mr. Darby renders it like that, shall reap also in the spirit of blessing. Now, comments on verse number 6 for a moment.
I was wanting in before you could put it verse 5. So that, I won't go back to that.
Right.
But the liberal soul shall be made fat. Maybe I've been applying that literally, physically, self-justification or something. But the principle is surely that both giver and receiver share the best.
Absolutely. That is the principle of it, isn't it? Because in that particular verse, as you say, it's the giver that's getting the blessing, but obviously the person to whom he gives is also receiving blessing. And Paul's making the appeal because there's need. But it's not just because of need, it's there's a spiritual reason for this.
That's right. The living idea of investment, that is the greatest investment is filling up treasures in heaven.
Good.
That which is eternal. I was thinking of Isaac, it says he sowed and reaped 100-fold. And taking it into the New Testament, there is no man that has left father, mother, brother, sister, so on and so on. It shall be 100-fold in this world and also in the world to come. The idea of sowing and reaping. And I thought of the, even an ungodly, it says about the midwives that the Lord gave them houses. Because they were prepared to spare the Egyptian, the sons of Israel. And the principle is no doubt that God is no man's debtor. As Pete says, he gives liberally on with a measure of it, you know. What scripture you can see. Peter's boat, the cost of the other boat and so on. I mean, that's not the motive,
no,
but you can see that.
When Paul, if I may, just before you bring another brother, when Paul writes to the Philippians, one of these things, one of these assemblies from Macedonia, he says, you remember in the fourth chapter, he gave once and again, when I was in Thessalonica, to my necessity. Now then he writes that beautiful verse, and it was the late Mr. William True who once said, that when the apostle writes, but my God shall supply all your need, according to his riches in glory by Christ Jesus. He was not writing an open check to every believer to live as they like. He was writing to an assembly that had a poverty, and had sent to the need of the apostle when he was in Thessalonica. And they said once, and then they sent again. But when Paul is writing the Philippian letter, they've sent again. And he's actually acknowledging a present gift. It was the third gift that Paul was acknowledging in the Philippian letter. But they've given once, they've given again. Now he's writing his letter of thank you to the minister. And look what he says, my God, the God in whom I depended, shall supply you and me. The blessing comes back to the giver, but it's met the need of the
it's also a long time to call, isn't it?
Well, yes, that was, I'm sorry, I really forgot to say that. It was really in response to your point, the problem of it.
Yeah.
So he says now, this is an odor of a sweet smell. It's a sacrifice well pleasing, but it was investment, all right.
Yes.
Peter?
Some time ago, I once read wrote an article on giving from Luke's Gospel. Entitled it, Money Matters, or Coins or Currency in the Days of Our Lord. The first is a mite. Then we get two mites. A mite's just a fourth of a farthing. We get a farthing, and we get two farthings. And then we get a penny. In tribute money, the Lord gave an object lesson on a penny. Show me a penny. Whose image is it? And then we get the piece of silver and the Luke 15. Then pieces in one box and it says dirty for it. Then it's the parable of the problems. So that's the coins and currency. Now, in chapter 18, of Luke, the Pharisee cried it for the Lord that he gave a tithe of all that he possessed. That's 10%.
Yeah.
Chapter 19, we get Zacchaeus giving 50%. The half of my goods I give to the poor. And in 21, we get the two mites of the widow maid and the lord who stands over the treasure, who sees she's given more than the lord. There's 5 rich men and there's 5 widows in Luke's gospel. That would be the thought of equality that we've read yesterday. But does it change if he is speaking anything by false accusations? I was assuring fourfolding, and that's fourfold.
That's very good. Now, do you notice what our brother is doing? He's bringing together a lot of ministry this week. The honesty factors that our brother David was talking about one night. But the other thing I would like to say is this. Why restrict that for the benefit of Kilrock? You could write that for the Believer's magazine, you'd have a good article.
Well, listen, Jim, you should look him up in front of him. Earlier you mentioned about robbing God from his glory. That reminded me of the verse in the last book of the Old Testament, chapter, Malachi chapter 3, verse.
Chapter 10.
I know we're not operating the card system anymore, but I think that there's a commandment to follow with a promise. Well, let's just read it.
Yes.
It says, bring ye all the pounds into the storehouse, that there may be meat in my house. And prove me now, herewith saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive.
Now that's very helpful comment. You know, it's an interesting point that the nation of Israel had robbed God. In that verse in chapter 3 is important. They robbed God over the 490 years they've been in the land. And the result of that was they were taken into captivity, of course. But even when God brought them back from captivity, we read in Nehemiah that they weren't back too long before they were not giving the tenth. And that's why the Levites had to go back and work in their fields. And so it's remarkable they didn't learn the lesson. So those practical things are very important and they fit very well into the context of what we're considering. Yes, we rob God when we fail to give.
Going back a little bit, in Proverbs 11:25, where we were speaking of the liberal soul shall be made fat, I found a note in my Bible which says that the Hebrew says the soul of blessing shall be made fat, which links in with what?
Very much so, without it.
The liberal person, the soul of blessing.
Very good. Now, Brother David,
yeah. I'm just trying to sort of pave the way for the following verses.
Yes,
and I'm just going to ask a simple question. The reaping, as compared to the sowing, is this just reaping in a spiritual sense, or does it also embrace reaping materially?
Well, I think the statements that are introduced in verse 6 that we've been considering clearly bring in the material. There is no doubt about that. I think that what Paul particularly is teaching the Corinthians is the spiritual. But did you have more than that in mind?
No, I mean, I was asking the question. I thought people might be just asking that question in their own minds as to whether, in fact, it was a material reaping. So I was thinking of what Frank was saying, in this world, and also in that which is to come.
Sometimes, we have to understand, as you know, that sometimes God does bless men materially for the fact that they've given, but he doesn't always do that. And so we've got to be careful when we introduce the material, as I think we said yesterday. But clearly, the spiritual is being emphasized here. That is, what was material in Israel in so many things is spiritual in the New Testament. And I think that's the principle that's coming out.
Sorry, I thought you said the material was being emphasized here, first of all.
No, I'm sorry, I meant the spiritual. If I said the word wrong.
To answer Brother West's question,
yes.
Is reaping here timely, present, or future?
Well, I think that it influences the present because it's a spiritual reaping.
Yeah.
And I think that the apostle is saying, that's why when we come to verse 8, but I want us to look at verse 7 first, but in verse, and God is able to make all grace, all giving, all gift abound towards you. And I think the present tense is being employed there to show that there are blessings that will be enjoyed now. It will be done for the receive as well. But I think Paul is saying to the, I think now for instance in Philippi where there was need, that verse we quoted earlier, my God shall supply all your need, they had given and God would make sure that they wouldn't suffer as a result of giving.
Right?
Right.
Just a general question perhaps for help firstly. On two occasions I've had brethren say, I can't give to the Lord because my money's earmarked. I think that's the reverse order, isn't it? I think when it says here in verse 7, every man according as he purposeth, God should be first. If I could use the word rather than earmarked, in the sense that it's not a case of, well, I've got a house, I've got a mortgage, I've got phone bills, I know that's what they pay, but I think it should be the reverse. Now, perhaps I might come in here just to give up another sign, how we can relax. Being a servant of the Lord, sometimes I get a gift and someone just shakes my hand and puts money in my palm, right? I've got this gift and when I went home and opened it, it was a shopping list. The brother must have been tempted to give me a gift, but he gave me a shopping list. So I'm speaking about practicing and being, the brother was being about being orderly, you know, I think we should be very careful. And God was saying, somebody's casually to come and say, oh, I'm home for the Lord. I think there should be a definite purpose.
Now, if you had known the brother, maybe it was in the Lord's mind for you to pay for the shopping.
I just wondered, Jim, do you regard giving as a specific spiritual gift? I'm now thinking of Romans chapter 12. You see, I know that we all are to give, but it seems as though some have that particular largeness of heart. He that giveth with simplicity.
I do. I look at it in that section as the fact that God has given to some the ability to exercise a gift that is denied to others because they don't have the material. I think we've all to give, and there are passages like this that will show that, but I think there is part of the gifts that are given. And clearly, just as those other gifts, God hasn't given them to all, so I don't think he's given that one to all. Now, I think we should look at verse, we haven't just underlined verse 7 and 8, but we want to ask you some questions.
Yes, I just want to make a comment on giving with regard to the taxation system in our country, where you get advantages if it's given to you a so-called service.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't like to be too hard on those who do it. I've never been fond of it myself because you've got to make known to it. There are some eyes that can see what is involved there. And I've always felt that giving is a very personal and a private exercise before God.
The young ones might want to, we're referring to covenant.
Our brother is referring to covenanting. You know the way that there are means by which you can use certain bodies and through it you can enter into a covenanting arrangement. Now I know it does take money out of the that would be normally given in the tax system, and it's a legitimate thing within our laws. That's why I wouldn't be hard on those who feel that's the way they want to operate. I've got a reserve about it, and I've never used it myself for that reason. The reason I've given.
I wouldn't sit in judgment.
No, that's what I'm saying. No, I agree.
So you wouldn't advise anyone as to what attitude they should adopt.
I think that's going to be a very personal thing for a believer to take into account. I accept, as I've said, that for the best of spiritual motives, there are those who feel, and there are those who have many, many, big funds to, because God has given them that wealth. And a lot of money could be put into the work of God. That is why I would be reticent to condemn. My personal feeling is that I would rather that my giving was before the Lord and not before the eyes of men. You'll notice in these epistles, and not only here, you'll find Paul making a number of appeals in different, Paul made appeals for money, never for himself. They were always for other assemblies and others who were in need. You never find the servant the only one he asks is God.
His own hands make his necessity.
Exactly. His own hands indeed. How was it missing?
D.W. Yolanda said, in defense, not in luxury.
That's right. I would just like to move on from Mr. Westmont about perhaps the manner of giving. Now, Tom Richardson has been quoted more than once this week. He was saying there were two ways to give a man a £5 note. One, you wrapped it around a half brick and you threw it at him. Two, you put it in an envelope and you gave it to him. The grace of giving.
Well, let's look at the manner of giving. Look at verse 7. The apostle in verse 7 says, every man according as he purposeth in his heart.
So there's the heart that's involved in this. There's this is the secret exercise before God. And then when it says, so let him give. Now here we have some of the matters that relate to how to give. Not grudgingly. Nor all of necessity. He doesn't feel that he must give. This is the idea of that spontaneity. That hilarity of giving. For God loveth a cheerful giver. Brother Jim there will remember, our late brother Guy Douglas, I was in the same meeting as him, and he used to read this verse, and he used to say that the idea is to say, hallelujah, pass the bag. You know, it's hilarious. It's in the sense of that cheerfulness in giving. Now, I think Sam wanted to come in.
Thank you, Roger. About the verse in 2 Samuel 24, if you'd like to hear. And verse 24 is in relation to buying a threshing floor. And the king said unto Arunna, nay, but I will surely buy it of thee at a price. Neither will I offer burnt offerings unto the Lord my God of that which doth cost me nothing. So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen for 50 shekels of silver.
Very good.
That cost me nothing.
And that which would cost me nothing, that brings in the same thing.
Could I suggest to you that in this manner of giving, there might be three illustrations. Grudgingly, like a stone. You know what it's like to squeeze, to get water from a stone. Of necessity, like a sponge, you've got to squeeze it. Or a cheerful giver like a spring.
Very good. And you said, well, he's not coming in as much because he's the chairman, but he has to come in.
Now,
brother Frank.
David could not build the temple at the temple, but it says he prepared and he gave all his might. I'm really emphasizing on that. He gave, you know, all his might. The end of the verse for this thing to begin. He chose.
Yes.
No restriction.
Not grudgingly, no reluctance, but he gave it. And that's a remarkable thing, to think that he was denied building the temple because his hands were stained with blood. Many another man would have left it, but no, he gave as much as he could. And he did it with all his might. Now, this is...
expressing not of necessity. When the Old Testament saints, whenever the tithe system was in operation, were they giving of necessity? And while we don't work on our tithe system today, has it anything to say to us?
Thank you. I think that's a very important question. I think that the Old Testament saints were doing it of necessity. There was a definite demand and statement made to which is, I think, what you're implying in fact, that they were given the tithe. Does the tithe have anything to say to us today? I think it does. I think it tells us the fact that that's the very least by which we should be working. I think that we should see that if God expected his people to give a tenth, under law, how much more under grace? This is what I had in their mind, the idea of the standards of righteousness, you see, in my introduction. That really, grace should bring us far, far beyond the law. After all, brothers and sisters, we're the beneficiaries of grace. We've seen that giving should be on the ground of grace in chapter 7, so we should far exceed what was under the Old Testament.
The chambers in the house of the Lord were for the tithes. But you remember that in the book of Nehemiah, instead of the tithes being in the chamber, there was the enemy in there with all his household furniture. And Nehemiah had to evict him out because the priests, the Levites, were being robbed of their source of maintenance of life because the enemy was in the chambers of the house of the Lord.
Going back to this matter of whether it's an obligation or whether it's out of free will,
yes.
I was thinking in terms of just the practicalities of making a contribution to the assembly expenses. Just thinking now of channeling our monies through the assembly. We must bear in mind that there are the recurrent expenses associated with assembly life.
Yeah.
The renting of the room, the heating, the lighting. In other words, that's an obligation in one sense. You know what I mean? And that we can only think in terms of giving to God over and above that.
Certainly. If you were in any club of any sort, you'd have to contribute to the normal running expenses. But that's it. But giving you goes well, well beyond that.
It's a big difference.
Yes, it meets the demand. Now let's look at verse number 8. And God is able. Look at that expression, God is able. It occurs many times in the New Testament. He is able to make all grace abound unto you. Every grace gift, if you like, abound towards you. That ye always, having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. God is able to do this, Paul is saying. You never give, as we've heard in the Proverbs, the giver, but more than that, you never give and lose as the result of the giving. I take all of that as in there, say, anything on that for me?
I'm only going to give what I got yesterday from a good brother that couldn't get in. A brother of Nelson suggested to me, I said, I'll take a note of it. It was with regard to giving, and he gave an excellent Old Testament illustration. I think it's excellent.
Good.
You remember Jehoiada? The priest going to rebuild the temple, and they put a chest next to the altar, and that's where the cash was put in the chest, next to the altar, and that's what happened in the previous chapter. There we have the sacrifice of Christ, give in relation to it.
That's very good. That's very. It's always in relation to this. Yeah. It's a spiritual giving. See, I wondered, Jim, whether in verse 8, he is talking about this all-sufficiency in every way, in order that the believers might abound to every good work, but that was material things.
Oh, yes.
Yes, yes. In other words, if I was trying to imply that, I must have So in other words, the giving here, there is a return in order that there might be more giving.
More giving. That ye may abound to any good work. I think that is practical. I remember we responded to Raymond from that verse earlier on that matter, yes. Well,
I misunderstood you because I thought that when you said,
if there was a misunderstanding, what I had in mind was, I quoted the Philippians 4 to show them the spiritual results, but I thought best able to.
Oh, I see.
It's just the word all in connection with the Lord's superabounding grace. It's all grace, with all sufficiency, at all times, for all good work, in all things.
Very good. Excellent.
In connection with the altar, Brother Tennant spoke of, and the giving.
Yeah.
You will see it in 1 Corinthians 14:15. Sacrifice of the Lord there for our preaching. He died for our sins according to the scriptures. In chapter 16, you get the correction.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. There's the chest next to the altar. That's very good.
I thought the idea was God is able to envelop you in all and everything. You can take the altar as a communication to others of any and all grace. God is able to envelop you.
Well, I think it bears all those ideas. Let's look at verse 9. As it is written,
Now this is the verse that our brother Jim Tennant quoted. And it's of course in Psalm 112. He hath dispersed abroad. He hath given to the poor. His righteousness remaineth forever. I remember a brother coming to Liverpool years ago and he preached that and he quoted it once, he quoted it 50 times in his address. It always remained in my mind. The importance of this. He hath dispersed abroad. He hath given to the poor. We never will lose by giving in that spirit that is in the 112th Psalm. His righteousness remaineth forever. Well, our brother quoted that, so we'll move on from that because we've ground to cover here. We want to do these next two verses and then come into the closing section. Now, he that ministereth seed to the sower, both minister bread for your food, and multiply your seed sown, and increase the fruits of your righteousness. Will this bring in the two ideas we were just discussing a moment or two ago? Who is he that ministereth seed to the sower? Who is Paul speaking about? I'm allowed to ask you a question now and again.
I would take it that's God.
That's God. You see the point? He that ministereth seed to the sower. No sower would ever have any seed at all. But God had best supplied it. That's the point there. So he's reminding us that we are dealing with a God who is the God of creation. The God who has given every resource and made it available to us. Now Paul says, don't you understand now that he is the one who ministers seed to the sower. He can minister bread for your food, or for food, if you take your that, and multiply your seed sown. So in fact, you put your seed into the ground, God will multiply. That's the 1 Corinthians 15. And then look what he says next. And he says, not only that, but increase the fruits of your righteousness. I take it that there's material and spiritual benefit there.
The apostle says in chapter 4, the first epistle, what hast thou that thou didst not receive? And if thou didst receive, why dost thou glory as though thou didst not receive? And the apostle is reminding us that every blessing that we have, whether spiritual or material, comes from God. And as Jim says, there would be no seed to sow if he didn't supply it.
Absolutely.
David said the same of thine own have we given.
That's right. He recognized that he couldn't have given it all but for God. That's right. So, that's verse number 10. Very important verse.
So there are three persons in the verse. There's first of all,
yes,
God as the source of it.
Yes.
And then there is the saints as the recipients of it, and there is the increase of righteousness that comes to the benefactor who gives it.
Right, very good. Now let's look at verse 11. Being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causeth through us thanksgiving to God. In a sense, this is part of the blessing that ensued anyway, my third section that I was reading here. But I'd like to hear what our brother has to say about verse 11.
This is really linking on, isn't it, from verse 8, because of one of these other parentheses.
Yes.
Verses 9 and 10.
Yes, that's right. You see what our brother's pointing out, that there's bracketed material that covers the whole of verse 9 and verse 10. So that you could read in verse 8, God is able to make all grace abound to you, that ye always having all sufficiency in all things may abound to every good work, being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causeth through us thanksgiving to God. That is why, of course, I concluded there as this little subsection today. But and the brackets that we've been looking at, I omitted to draw attention, but I'm grateful that you've drawn have added material that we've been looking valuable material in between.
Brother Philip.
Jim, would you care to give us a little advice from your source on the general aspect of giving? You see, what we're dealing with, strictly speaking here, is ministering to the saints. But we live in a world where we're constantly beset by those who are rattling hands in front of us, who were putting appeals to the envelopes and the doors, who were coming up to us and asking us to give to this, to give to that, to give to the other. Could you give us a little advice?
Well, my own personal view on that would be that our particular responsibility as the Lord's people, in Assembly Fellowship, is that our giving should be directed either through the Assembly or to Assembly workers, so that those who are planting that which is of God, their hands will be strengthened in their ministry. Now, in many of the countries that we think of where there's a need, there are those who are serving the Lord. And I think that, I can remember being in Assembly years ago when, I can't remember which country it was now, but one of the great famines or, you know, problems occurred. And that very week, one of the brethren, and there was an older brother, a very lovely man, and he had an interest in things like that. He got up and he said, "Brethren, think of that need. Let's make sure money's gone now from the Assembly." They thought of who to send it to. So that the need of that land would be helped to be met. But so would the testimony of those who serve the Lord in that land in a way that we feel is according to the New Testament would be strengthened and enhanced. A, that, and B, we knew that we were putting into the hands of those who would handle it right, covering the principles that we had here. Now, I'm not going to say that we, you know, sometimes for the sake of testimony, we may be wise to put something into an envelope. So I wouldn't condemn people to do that. But having said that, that's not the way I want my... I mean, we know that many of these organizations, and we're not here to condemn them. See, thank God there are some people who have got to care for others in the world, even. But having said that, we know a lot of the money goes to administration of these great organizations. We are wanting to strengthen what is of God and still meet the need. I think we can become very insular. I think your question's important. Mm. But we should understand that we have a responsibility to all men. We should pray for them. And we should do good to them.
One who became poor to make others rich, Matthew and Luke 2, he couldn't have been poorer. He was born in a cut of shilling, greater than a manger. But in Matthew 2, as a young child, he was presented with gold, frankincense. Now, I've seen the reverse of the verse, for we know the grace of our Lord Jesus, that through he was rich, yet for your sake became poor, that ye through his poverty might become rich. In the Laodicean church, they prided themselves. They were rich and need of nothing.
Yes,
but the Lord said, "You're poor." You're poor. They were rich, but he said they were poor. They were to buy gold.
Yes.
Tried in the fire. That you may be rich.
So the whole thing is spiritual. That's the point. Yes, that's good. Thank you.
Right. Just advising in terms of giving. And it does link with what Philip was saying, and that is, I understand in terms of the organization that reference that you made to, there is often no problem in terms of receiving finance. It's workers to distribute it that's the problem. And I'm thinking here of Hebrews 13, that to do good and to communicate, forget not. That often when we give, materially, that for us, that's the end of it.
Yes.
Now for some, that might be all that they can do.
Yes.
But the scripture says we've got to get involved in the giving. And not just the giving materially and leave it to others. But where we can, we get involved. But to do good and to communicate, forget not.
Yes. You know, it's an interesting thing that a lot of visits have been made to some countries, as you know, in Eastern Europe and so on. And sometimes the sad thing is that they've gone, not only from this country but others, in the hands of those who have not necessarily been a great help to the assemblies of those planets. Mm-hmm. And I think we've been seeing in this epistle the importance of material things in the hands of brethren, and competent brethren who are able to help the saints as well. And I hear the crying need in Romania today is not the practical thing now, but it's ministry that will strengthen testimony and regulate the ways of the people of God. So that we've got to remember that balance that runs, this is the hands of those who take it. Maybe you've heard something else.
In reference to the first point, moving
into envelopes,
I'd like to remind you that some of us operate in a village situation, but we're known to all.
Yes.
Yes. And we put leaflets through their door in the hope that there will be a response, a spiritual response.
Yes.
And when they come to us with envelopes, it's our testimony to them.
I agree.
What we're doing. And there are several of them, and they all know each other. We know them, they know us,
yeah.
And they know each other. The collectors know each other, and they speak about these things.
Yeah.
And with them, I don't think,
no,
have something adverse said about the Lord's people.
I agree. That's why I did make that proviso, and I think you're absolutely right. Right. Can we move on?
In the first section, Jim, it was the promised gift.
Yes.
In the second section, it was the principle of giving.
Right.
We've now come to the promotion of gratitude.
Good, good. Excellent, you're bringing me to the last section. Very interesting. Some things you need to accept, yes. No, that's good. We'll get to these next. Now, 12:15, we're going to look in closing at the blessing. That's the title I've given. You'll have to bow to the brother of the blessing which results. Now let's look then at verses 12 to 15. For the administration of this service not only supplieth the want of the saints. You see what's coming out now? That was one of the big things that was important to be met. But he says here, but it's abundant also by many thanksgiving. This is your point that you're making. Many thanksgivings to God.
When the saints were to receive the gift, there would be this abundance of thanksgiving.
Yes.
And that was provoked by the exercise of the giving of the gift.
And apart from anything else, in the terms of what Phil introduced earlier, God was going to be glorified in this. So there was something going to go to the throne of God in the little bit.
It's underlined, isn't it? Verse 11, thanksgiving to God. Verse 12, thanksgivings unto God.
Good.
Verse 13, they glorified God. And then verse 15, thanks be unto God.
Excellent. Excellent. So, maybe we should look at these verses together, 12 and 13, because they...
I'm just thinking about this service. It's a priestly service.
Yes.
Yes. In other words, we've been made priests, and we sometimes limit the scope of our priestly ministry. This is one aspect.
It's a similar word, if I remember rightly, to what Paul uses about his gospel preaching in Romans chapter 15. We sometimes denigrate gospel preaching, but we forget that it's a spiritual ministry. We denigrate giving, but it's a spiritual ministry. It's priestly. You know, our priesthood, I think we often forget and think that the only thing we think about priesthood is the breaking of bread. Whereas in fact, the epistle that deals with the breaking of bread never talks to the priest at all. And the epistles that deal with priests never talk about the breaking of bread. It's priestly, but you've got to remember the emphasis is not there. So we've got to understand priesthood is a much wider truth than people...
Yeah, it's not a truth of will. He points out that the preaching the gospel is divine power. Servant grace.
Very good. Very good. Yes, that's right.
Brother Wilson.
What's the difference? There's 12 things together. The two factors that then mentioned, the chest beside the altar. This ministry is the chest.
Yes.
But this service is the altar.
Good.
So that spiritually, we equate the chest and the altar. Spiritually, we need to say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So thus going back to the Philippians 4 passage, the ascending offering, you see, is practical in that passage. In other passages, it's the preaching of the gospel. In other passages, it's our thanksgiving and worship.
The communication there is the peace of mind.
brings them together.
This issue is finished, and the offer is now available for the contribution of the earth offering and the suffering of the fellowship.
Upon which each gets a part.
Isn't it significant that the word administration and the word distribution is the word that's used in Acts chapter 2? They continued in fellowship. It's the exact same word. And it's the same word that you find in the epistle to the Philemon, the communication of your faith. So that there is two aspects of our fellowship.
Yes.
There is the communication of our faith, and here is the communication of good works in the giving of the saints, and it's all fellowship into which we've been brought.
It's this word that our brother mentioned was over my house and my house of it, going on. It's common chair.
That's what it is.
That's right. While you're talking about the administration, you mentioned the term administration. What are you going to give us on the expression, the experiment of this administration?
The experiment of it wasn't the experiment in the sense that you use it still. It's the carrying out of it.
Yes.
And Brother Peter.
The proof, the carrying out and proving of it.
Your statement, Bullet, concerning the tithes in Nehemiah 13. Is it? The priest had to give the tithe of the tithes.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Well, the tithes in Nehemiah 13, of course, were to, that was part of the peace offering principle, that they were to get the benefit of those things, and that because the giving had been diminished, they were suffering, and they had to go back to their fields of work. Oh, then you have to give a tenth out of that. So, let's come back now, just to be orderly. Look at verse 12 again, as we're looking at this section from 12. For the administration, the common sharing of this service, not only supplied the want of the saint, but is abundant also by many thanksgivings unto God. Now, Brother David contrasted that with the term in the singular in verse 11, thanksgiving to God. So it's getting bigger, this idea of thanksgiving to God. Look at verse 13. Whilst by the experiment, that's the actual putting to proof in use of this ministration, by that, they glorify God for your professed subjection unto the gospel of Christ. In other words, all of this is because they were saved. It's the result of the gospel of Christ. For the gospel of Christ, and for your liberal distribution unto them and unto all. So you can see that they were meeting the need of the saints, and it was overflowing by taking to others as well, unto all.
I just wondered, Jim, whether this expression, they glorify God, that the various ways in which this was done, you started by making reference for your professed subjection unto Christ.
Yes.
Number two, for your liberal distribution unto them.
Yes.
And then perhaps thirdly, and unto all men.
Yes.
And then verse 14 runs on as well, and by their prayer for you. And then this longing after you for the exceeding grace of God.
It's
all bringing glory to God.
Absolutely.
I was just going to say, Jim, the grace of God was not in vain in their lives.
They suffered. Absolutely. I mean, this is really tying, can you see, because we're drawing to a close soon, can you see how that the apostle is drawing all these threads together now? That's why I think it's important. There's one sense in which it all continues. But you can see in this closing section, he's bringing out the fruitfulness and the results. And all that's coming up, God is getting glory. The saints are getting help. There are blessings that are being administered. The unsaved, as David has catalogued them so nicely for it. And you can see that he's saying that this is for not only for your liberal distribution, but unto all. And by their prayer for you. Notice in verse 14, by their prayer for you. So the apostle is showing that what this will do, it will strengthen communion amongst the saints. It will strengthen fellowship. And there's stronger prayer bonds being forged. Isn't that a nice thing? These saints were critical saints. And they were divisive saints in the first epistle. But Paul is now speaking of spiritual results produced in them that strengthens them. The more we, can I say this today, before we conclude our readings in Gerona, that you'll find it's true. The person you pray for, you'll find it hard to criticize him. If you really have his genuine interest at heart, and you really want to, you see God bless him, then you find that's inconsistent with criticizing him. When you're at variance with a brother, you don't usually pray for him, sadly. But see what's happening here. He's come around now to spiritual results, and he's talking about your prayer, by their prayer for you, which long after you for the exceeding grace of God in you.
Well, how do you interpret that in that last bit? I just wondered whether those who were receiving these gifts would really have that desire within themselves to manifest the same qualities as that.
Oh, I think so, yes, that's right. Their prayer for you, which long after you, for the exceeding grace of God in you. I take it that it strengthens the actual affection of the saints towards them who have been there. Those who had received it now, there's a greater love put in their hearts for those who had given. Is that what you have in mind?
Well, I wonder in fact whether they themselves were desirous, also bound up in here, bound up in this expression, whether they themselves were desirous of manifesting the same features, this exceeding grace of God.
They're
all not
handy.
Yes. Go back to the reference to chapter 8 and the verse number 9. We didn't specify at the time because you wanted to go on, but he became poor. That was voluntary, wasn't it?
It was.
Four times the Lord Jesus became. But he became poor. And the latter part of this chapter, as David said, when I noted it, that it is thought of God. But there is this the idea of voluntary giving. I'm at the end of verse 13.
Yes.
Your liberal distribution.
Yes.
Men are always trying to get rich,
that's
you know,
right,
today, but to become voluntary poor in order that others might be rich. And I was going to try to talk to two verses, chapter 8, verse 9, and the last verse, and we were not at it, but
yes,
they're measureless.
Yes.
They're measureless. That's given to God for his unspeakable gift. And the riches that Christ has given us, we have to respond, but here comes the measure.
Good. You see, the liberal distribution in verse 13 is the opposite. It's the positive as distinct from the negative in verse 7. Not of necessity. Not of necessity. But now I think you've done what we wanted to do, because the time is getting limited now. And let's look at this last beautiful. And where the apostle says, thanks be unto God for his unspeakable gift. Now it's an interesting thing that in a letter that more than any New Testament letter unveils and unfolds for us the problems and privations and sufferings and afflictions of the apostle, is the letter where three times over he says, thanks be unto God. Isn't that good? A thankful heart. Now you'll notice that it says in at the end of chapter 2, thanks be unto God who leads us forth in the triumph of Christ. Paul says we're not toiling on. This is not just toiling on. We're being led forth in the triumph of Christ. Then in chapter 7, thanks be unto God that put the same earnest care into the heart of Titus. And now we come to this. Thanks be unto God for his unspeakable gift. Now there are two thoughts that could be expressed in this verse. Perhaps many more. But on the one hand, we usually think of the person of Christ. As we quoted, I think, the other day, blessed be God our God, who gave for us his well-being. But there's another sense in which you could see that there is a sense in which this verse could apply to the context in a closer way and speak of the actual gift and be practical. Thanks be unto God. Because the word unspeakable is not yet fully expounded. They probably both tie together, but I'd like to hear your views on it now.
Isn't the apostle really saying to them here, if the exercise of the saints in meeting the need in Judea provokes thanksgiving, that gift provokes thanksgiving in them? should it not be that the gift that we read of in the chapter, the previous chapter, should provoke a greater thanksgiving in us? There's got to be the abounding of thanksgiving Godward for the gift that he has given, since it was so great.
You mean verse 9 of chapter
8? Yes, 9 of chapter
8. I must confess that I had not thought of the second of your alternatives.
No.
And I just wonder, with regard to the possessive pronoun his,
yes.
His
unspeakable, his unspeakable. Yeah.
Would you be using it in the latter sense of a gift that's being given to him?
Yes.
Yes,
that's right. That's right.
And yes, I do favour the first, really, you know, and I've always favoured it, and I did in my introduction, I think you remember, and I quoted that verse then, you know, who gave it. But it's just, it is suggested sometimes, and I thought it too, yeah. Junk.
On your second choice one, if we accept that, it ties in at the end of verse 6. God loveth Jupiter.
That's right, it says.
And God alone knows what a person gives.
Yes.
So, it's unspeakable in that respect.
It's not fully expounded in that way. You see, I think it's maybe one of these verses where we could enjoy both, as we said, quite comfortably. I would never like to rob the sense of what we've always enjoyed from that last bit. And I tend to throw my weight on that, but I thought I should, Eric, run with it.
Yeah,
where's
your mind?
Yeah.
Can't you not also, I'm with you all the way, but can you not also add to this that all giving